Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for All About Android is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
Hey, what's up? Welcome to All About Android. This is episode 83, recorded on Tuesday, October 30th, 2012. We are your weekly source for the latest news, hardware, and apps for the Android faithful. I'm Jason Howell.
Oh, I'm Eileen Rivera.
I'm Ron Richards.
I didn't know where you were going there, Chad. I didn't know either.
It was the next button on the switcher, so I just kind of did that one.
That works.
You're right.
Sometimes it's all you need is the next button. Welcome to what I imagine is going to be a pretty big show, right?
There wasn't much news. There wasn't. Coming in, I was like, what are we going to talk about this week?
Actually, there was a point, before yesterday where I was like, what are we going to talk about? And we'll get to that. When we get to the news, but yes, this week we've got a whole lot of NextEye to talk about. That kind of sounds dirty.
Yeah.
But that's okay. I'll go with it.
Is a dirty video we will talk about later.
What's that?
There is a dirty video we will talk about later.
Oh, I forgot that's in there. Yeah. It's overshadowed by all this other stuff. But yes, dirtiness will be coming up soon. Also, Android 4.2. Maybe you've heard a little bit about it. We'll talk all about that and so much more. Before we jump into the show, what's up, folks? How are you guys?
I'm doing all right. Apparently, I want to hear about Eileen and what life is like on the Starship Enterprise.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I've decided to go into science. I have not yet gotten my badge for the
official. Well, you're just an ensign, right? I mean, you don't have a rank yet, so you need to get a couple of dots,
yet.
And then you'll be all set.
I know. But I will get there. It is my goal. But things are good. Things are good. I'm sorry I can't be in studio today. Had a lot of shoots. But
thankfully we have you covered.
If you had come to the studio today, you would have seen that we were ready
to. In fact, let's just go ahead.
Yes.
There we go. I think this works. Do I have this right? Am I on the right side?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Is that right?
Yeah, just stick the pin. Yeah, it's all right. Just stick the pin in the TV.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, I will move.
Yeah, there we go. It ain't moving.
Hilarious.
I really wish I could stick that up for the remainder of the show, but
make sure to wear my uniform next week, and then I can properly have my pin and.
Do you have the L Cars live wallpaper on your tablet?
Right,
then that would be
of course
perfect.
You do. Of course you do. You installed that immediately and never got rid of it.
There you
right?
go. She really liked that live wallpaper. It was crazy.
All over that. Yes.
All right. Well, I don't know who this belongs to, but we'll go ahead and drop it in the mail to you, and I'll apologize to whoever gave it to us later.
It came from off camera.
Yes.
Alex Gumpel.
Yeah,
right?
I'm pretty sure it was Alex. Alex is great. Yep. Thank you for donating this to the show. All right, let's dive right into an impressive amount of news. Let's do it. All right, so I was saying, before yesterday, I honestly had no idea what the show was going to be about because we knew there was an event yesterday.
Well, no, so they had announced for a couple of weeks we've been leading up to an event in New York City that was going to be following the Apple event, the Amazon event, so now Google was going to play. But then last week we started hearing rumblings that this storm down in the south was gonna get some energy, get some power behind it, and it's coming towards New York. And then was it on Thursday or Friday they canceled it? They canceled it early. Like
I thought they canceled it on Sunday, actually.
Oh, was it on Sunday?
It was on the weekend. And,
it's been very
it was
long
a thread all weekend.
Yeah.
People had already, I think there was a bunch of tech press that was already out there on the East Coast. And what happened was just that the location of the event turned out to be an evacuation zone. So even if they wanted to try and pull it off, there was just no way. I mean, that's just. Right.
So it was canceled on Saturday.
Oh, Saturday.
So all weekend. And, and honestly, after seeing everything that happened in New York, it was the right call.
Absolutely, it was the right call.
And we probably take a moment to hope that everybody that's been affected by Hurricane Sandy is doing okay by now. And hopefully, a lot of people without power. I know my family on Long Island doesn't have power right now. So hopefully everybody's kind of Staying warm. Yeah, staying warm and you know, important is that everyone's okay. It's kind of more important than announcements and things
Absolutely.
Like that.
Absolutely. This made this made perfect sense that they did it. Although you couldn't help just on the tech side of it as relates to this particular event, when I heard about it, I was like, wow, well, what is Google going to do?
Well,
last year, the same event got delayed because of Mr. Steve Jobs. Remember?
Right.
So this is like this.
That event.
Yeah, it's the second time in a row that their event would have been delayed.
Was the event in New York going to be at Javits? Was that where it was going to be, or where was it supposed to be?
I thought it was in Battery Park somewhere.
It was down at that. Okay, yeah. So that's completely underwater. So that's good that they didn't do that.
That was definitely, obviously, a very, very good move.
Yeah, no, but
it was like, what are you
going
to do then?
Yeah, so going into yesterday, I was like, so are they just going to do it here? Or are they going to scramble and do an event in Mountain View?
Because, they had all of these. Yeah. I mean, what we later found out, essentially what Google ended up doing is just releasing in a blog post and saying, here's everything we're going to do, just basically made it all real and set in stone.
I was very surprised they did that. I was very surprised.
Yeah, but in retrospect, I kind of wasn't. They had all of these NDAs that were lifting.
Yeah.
They had given what we're going to definitely show a decent amount of footage of. They had given The Verge, in particular, some really good access to all of this stuff. So, it wasn't like they hadn't already kind of gone down this road of, well, it's happening.
But
they had inventory.
But what's interesting is that they had a big dog and pony show planned, and then they scrapped it and then went way the other end of the spectrum and just did a blog post and just let all the press go out. And we're going to talk about this later after we review everything. But like, they could have pulled something together in California quickly to get some, get Larry holding a Nexus 10.
Sure.
I don't know. The PR person in me was like,
The question we'll get to would that be necessary? Ultimately, they ended up putting out a blog post and detailing everything. And, by and large, a lot of the rumors that we had been following leading up to this event were spot on. The Nexus 4, we'll just start there. Their latest flagship phone lands November 13th, $299 for the, 8-gig version, right?
That is correct.
And then $349 for the 16 gig version. So just right off the top, Eileen, I know that, obviously 8 gigs is low. So if you're going to get this, get the 16 gig version. Is that enough for you?
No.
Deep sighs. Yeah.
No, the 8 gigs is, half of your... that's going to get taken up in no time for me. But I'm managing. I've got my Galaxy Nexus. I'm constantly deleting apps. I just have to be conscious about what I have on my phone. Ultimately, right now, it's okay. But I should really check to see how much space I actually have left on here. But no, I want a 32. I want a 32.
Yeah, I actually just ran up against my 32 gigs of storage on here. Started getting a notice that said that I was running out of space. I was like, wow, I'm already up there? How did I get up there? I have no idea how I got up there, but it happens,
Yeah, and it never happens to me. But I don't know how or why. I think because I've never had that much storage on the devices.
Yeah.
So like, I think I've naturally, we talked about this before.
Scaling it down.
But I do get the data warning all the time, which I got the other day. I did over 4 gig of data so far this month.
Notification going over the data limit.
Although it's unlimited, I just have it more to tell me when I go that
right,
far.
Right.
But so somebody asked me on Twitter when this came out, they said, am I going to get the Nexus 4? Mm-hmm. And my first instinct was like, no, I'm happy with the Galaxy Nexus. And as I'm looking at it, it's, it's $299. I can make 8 gig work, and it's unlocked on the Google Play Store.
I mean,
really, you can make 8 gig work?
Yeah, I can totally make 8 gig work.
Oh my Lord.
Yeah. Hey, if you want to go on halvesies, I'll prove it to you.
Oh no, I don't need any proof. I'm not doing anything.
But what then gave me pause? Not even looking at the specs or anything. But I'm on T-Mobile, and the 16 gigs available on T-Mobile for $199 with a 2-year contract. I'm already on T-Mobile. I probably have an upgrade credit coming my way. Now I'm like, maybe I do upgrade.
Mm-hmm.
When we get into it later, I think what makes it really compelling is 4.2. So, but yes, we'll get to that later.
Sure. Yeah. So as far as the device is concerned, just real quick, if people haven't been following, 4.7-inch screen, 1280 by 768 IPS display, a quad-core 1.5 gigahertz Snapdragon S4 Pro processor, which Google says is the fastest so far. Not a slouch when it comes to the processing power there. 8-megapixel camera, 1.3-megapixel front-facing, and as I said, up to 16 gigs of storage. Now, the big kind of discussion at this point is, how does Google have a flagship Nexus device that doesn't have a flagship feature like LTE, connectivity capability? It is capable of dual cell HSPA plus 42 on the pentaband radio that's inside, and that's actually up from HSPA plus 21. So that technically gives you 42 megabits per second capability depending on your area. And I guess that would be what T-Mobile is how you get access to that. So, you know, the speed capability is there, but it's just the compatibility aspect. Why no LTE? And Andy Rubin, if I had thought about it, I would have put the what would Andy say? But he came back to
two. Did he say something?
It's possible that Andy Rubin, well, I don't know what exactly
he's joined
he
us
said,
now. There
but
he
I'll
is.
Paraphrase him as his mouth moves. He says it came back to two issues: the user experience and the network compatibility. He says the user experience part is explained.
sorry.
Now it's we okay. have technical
difficulties. Little TriCaster fail.
It's okay. I almost wish that was Andy Rubin across the screen. The user experience part is explained as being an issue of battery life. But he, let's see here. I'm pulling from, I believe this was the Verge article that I pulled this from, somewhat unintentionally lays bare a big issue with LTE. Two radios, and it's kind of a compatibility issue there, as well as, you know, as well as what he said, the battery life, cost. Also,
the price is down. The price is low. On
keeping
that?
The prices low. That is a big deal. This is, I think, the big story as far as I'm concerned with the Nexus 4. You get an unsubsidized, fully unlocked phone for $300, and it's a flagship level device. By all accounts, it's great hardware. And that's just awesome.
And honestly, that sounds like the dream that they were trying to put together when they launched the Nexus One.
Totally.
And
they're
kind of
going back to that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now they're selling it themselves. It's at a lower price point. Although the Nexus One wasn't as low. I mean, Nexus One was what? Wasn't it like? What was it, Eileen? Didn't we pay it? It was like $699 or something like that. The Nexus
something
One.
Something like that.
Yeah. It was super expensive. But this is the kind of the Google dream, is that they're going to give you a good device at a better price and everything.
And get you kind of unaddicted to the mobile carrier subsidy kind of plan that, at least here in the States, we're by and large, very addicted to that kind of approach. So I don't know.
Yeah, I think the Nexus, I mean, you can tell me, Jason, but I mean, the Nexus on Verizon, the Galaxy Nexus on Verizon was hampered and, you know, is getting the updates late. You know, there's some Verizonware on it, am I correct in that?
There's a little bit of Verizonware on there. There were a couple of things on there, but yeah, the big deal there is, okay, so I have a Galaxy Nexus on Verizon, but because of the LTE and all of the kind of contracts around that, there are deals that need to be made and clearances that need to be made on a network level for me to get my Jelly Bean 4.2 update without rooting and ROMing it myself. And I think in Google's eyes, that just goes entirely against the promise of what they want to do with the Nexus brand.
Yep.
And so here they're just sidestepping that, and sure, they're leaving some people out in the cold. And I understand, you know, when you have LTE, it's hard to go backwards. But when I really look at my own usage with this phone, I turn off LTE all the time. I might be alone in doing that. And I'm sure a lot of people, you know, do the opposite and leave it on all the time. But I turn it off because it saves my battery. And I don't need an LTE antenna running while it's in my pocket updating Twitter. Like, that's inefficient to me.
Yep.
So it kind of doesn't bother me. I would be interested in this if I wasn't locked into another year because I'm addicted to subsidies.
Well, and I think part of the argument, you know, as you mentioned, is battery life. And, you know, I feel like battery technology has not caught up to LTE yet. So there's a lot of pros and cons on both sides. I mean, I want LTE. I really do. And if I get the Nexus 4, obviously that's not happening. So I could see both sides of the story, but ultimately it sounds like they're taking a stance against the carriers that have been, you know, horrible to the U.S. customers. Now, those of you out there international, this is going to be a great deal. I think really good deal.
Yeah. And honestly, and just to play devil's advocate as a con, like no LTE, fine. You know what I mean? Like, it's fine. I mean, I at that data speed, I'm not really noticing. I'm not really worried about it. I've got no complaints on this. You know what I mean? Like, I kind of go back to the Louis C.K. on Conan. You know, like, it's magic that I can get data on this device.
Right.
Like,
the things that we can do with this is still pretty darn impressive.
You know, like, and
Sorry. It's just, for me, of course I want LTE, I want speed, but I just want the data to work.
Yeah.
AT&T.
Oh, well, yeah. Well, I'm on T-Mobile and I never have that problem. I mean, like, I mean, knock on wood, you know, like, and admittedly, I'm in San Francisco, I'm in New York, I'm in, you know, dense.
But you're going to high traffic places. Right. You're going to, like, conferences and you're not having too many issues, right?
No, I never have issues. I was fine at San Diego. I was fine. You know, the only complaint I have with T-Mobile service is that when I go deep, like, and I go into a club that's in a basement or something like that, the signal in general drops while my friends on AT&T have a signal and I don't know what that is, but that's my only complaint. I go to sporting events. I go to highly, you know, densely populated conferences, stuff like that. I always have HSTPA or whatever running on HSPA running. Yeah, so
I'd be interested to hear from, you know, our listeners whether or not LTE is a deal breaker for you guys, especially if you wanted to get the new Nexus phone versus I don't know getting the GS3 or, you know, sticking with the Galaxy Nexus or, you know, any of the Droid phones that have LTE. Is that going to be a deal breaker for you?
Yeah, we have someone sitting watching this show right now. Andrew is here from New Zealand.
Thank you for coming.
Oh. Doesn't mean, you know, it is not a deal breaker for Andrew. I see a lot of people in the chat room that say it is and it isn't. I just think that's kind of what you're going to get here, right?
Yeah.
Like, you're going to get a split mixed opinion, obviously, because to some people those faster speeds are important. But for $299, no more anything required of you after that $299, I think it's a decent trade-off.
I'm with you there, but I mean, if it's just unfortunate the whole Android platform doesn't have a lot of choice in handsets and that you're just stuck with the only one that Google puts out.
Totally.
You know, like, wait a minute. You can just choose another phone.
There you go. Actually, this is a good question. Galaxy Nexus still available?
It's a good question.
Are they keeping it for sale?
I didn't see it in the store, actually.
I'm sure
folks in the chat room are going to be able to answer this. I haven't looked myself.
You've got to be able to get it from like Verizon and stuff. Not from Google, maybe, but from Verizon probably.
Yeah, not from the Play Store, you know, may have been kind of an interesting way to spin it then. Well, you couldn't get the LTE version through the Play Store anyways.
Right.
So it doesn't matter.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, I don't have the LTE version.
Right.
So
anyway, so, you know, and aside from that, design wise, I really want to see it. It's, you know, it's doing the glass on the front and glass on the back thing.
Well, right.
So
true.
How fragile is it?
Well, I think the most important thing is that it's LG. And so what is an LG handset going to be? I mean, like, I'm almost kind of curious about how to use it. I want to see it before I pull the trigger on it.
Absolutely.
Like, I want to see one in the wild, and I want to be able to touch it and feel it and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. But it's LG's moment in the sun to step up and prove Eileen wrong. So
it is.
I know. Prove me wrong, LG. Prove me wrong. Now I will see people walking around with LG phones, right?
Yeah.
That's right.
Right?
Yes, you will. Yes.
You don't see them.
That is no longer a segment we can
rely on.
The new
Android
because
in the wild.
A Nexus is an LG device.
Yeah,
so Eileen, what can you tell us about the 7?
Well, hey, guess what? A lot of us have been, like me, have been asking for 32 gig versions of things. Well, as was already kind of leaked, we talked about this last week, the Nexus 7, there will be a 32 gig version available in the store and one with data, HSPA Plus tablet.
Right.
And they're both going to be available for $299 unlocked on November 13th. We kind of knew this was coming. I kind of want this.
Yeah.
I'm like $299 with the data, 32 gigs. Oh, that's nice. That's a good price. I'm just wondering what the month-to-month, you know.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. That's what would hold me back from getting a data plan with my tablet because I gotta admit, going
back to the rant and the freak out last week over the iPad mini for 32 gig with mobile for less than the Wi-Fi only iPad mini.
Way less.
$50.
$30.
$30. Yep.
But that's a 16 gig Wi-Fi, and this is 32.
Right.
So you even get more storage.
Right. Exactly.
I'm saying this seems like a really good deal if you're into the 7-inch tablets, and I think they did really well with this. And, you know, this gives me hope. The fact that there's a 32 gig, they upped the gig for the Nexus 7, maybe that Nexus 4. We'll get a 32 gig too, huh? Go on.
Maybe. Yeah. Hey, it's certainly not outside of the realm of possibility. This is 4 months after the Nexus 7 was originally unveiled,
yeah,
so it wasn't too long to wait.
What I thought was interesting, and I might have just missed it as the months have gone on since Google I/O, since it launched, but to see it available at all the countries that they offered it for, you know, like Australia and France and Spain and Canada, mm-hmm, and Japan. But here in the States, to see it now be sold at GameStop, Office Depot, Office Max, Staples, and Walmart, like that's... They're starting to penetrate retail locations and Christmas shopping. A lot more people might be getting Nexus 7s than they might have last year when it was just or earlier this year when it was just available through the Google Play Store or through Amazon or something. So
right, yeah. Right. So, yeah, I think you're right.
It's fascinating. Very interesting. But that wasn't the only tablet news that came out of this event.
Oh, no.
This whole announcement is just, it's like one thing after another.
I know, it's great.
The much-rumored Nexus 10 also was unveiled at the event. This is the latest official Nexus tablet, clocking it at a 10-inch tablet. It is built by Samsung, and it's got some impressive specs. It's, you know, 10 inches.
It does.
2560 by 1600 pixel resolution. It's running a 1.7 gigahertz dual core processor, 2 gig of RAM. It's got a battery that gives about 9 hours of playback on HD video, which is crazy. It's got a 5 megapixel camera in the back and a 1.9 megapixel camera in the front. And it's got a whole bunch of other neat little things like 2 NFC chips, one in the front, one in the back, as well as... just a really, really nice display that is getting compared to the iPad's Retina display. They're calling it True RGB Real Stripe PLS, which I feel somebody in marketing needs to get around that title. But but The Verge got the first look at it here, and we're looking at that video, and they did not – and admittedly, they might get caught up in the hype or whatnot, but they did not hesitate by saying it is the nicest 10-inch Android tablet on the market as of yet. So it looks like similar to the Nexus 7 with Asus – Google partnered with Samsung and got the 10-inch tablet right, it seems.
That resolution, I know Jason and I were IMing yesterday, and I said, is that resolution better than the Retina 13-inch MacBook Pro? And I think we decided that it was, right?
Oh, yeah, it is. 300 pixels per inch density on this tablet, on the 10. Fourth generation iPad. 264 pixels per inch.
There you go.
So, yes, absolutely is.
It's got a 1610 aspect ratio, which is a little odd. And my only complaint about it was that the OS the version of Android operating system on there just seemed very – didn't seem as tablet optimized as it would have liked. It just looked like an expanded phone version, you know?
Yeah.
We'll talk about it a little more.
Absolutely.
But what's interesting is that – and we're going to talk about this next – is that it is running Android 4.2 right on the device as well. So similar to the phone, you can just get Android 4.2 on this device right out of the box, which is fascinating. But price-wise, though, $399 for a 16-gig version and $499 for the 32-gig version. So and that makes it a total of $100 less expensive than the comparable iPad with the Retina display. So it's real tempting. It's going to be available just like all the other devices on November 13th, which is my father's birthday.
We know it's your father's
birthday.
Oh, yeah, that's actually a good point. Yeah. and it's going to be in the Google Play Store, US, UK, Australia, France, Germany, Spain, Canada. And it's also going to be at Walmart, which is very interesting.
No mobile networks.
No mobile networks. Yeah. No. But
imagine that'll change.
Yeah, I was just gonna say, following the Nexus 7's lead, now I wouldn't be surprised if some, you know, Q1 or Q2 they roll it out with support.
Yeah. Well, actually, now that I think about this makes perfect sense. This type of approach of let's get it out now. We know it's a good product. Let's get it out. And then when we are able to kind of make those relationships and those deals with the carriers to get a mobile version of it out, then we'll do that.
Yeah.
Because
I love them so much, Engadget has a really nifty comparison chart. And I swear, tech blogs, I will always I will pimp your comparison charts because totally. Because it breaks it down.
Save us a lot of time.
Yeah, and you can here you can compare, you know, the Nexus 10 to the iPad 4th generation, the Galaxy Note 10.1, and the Kindle Fire HD, which is an interesting. This is the field right now of these sized devices, and it's hard to compare. The Nexus 10 comes out on top, if you ask me, in nearly every spot.
Yeah. So, Nexus 10 dual front-facing stereo speakers.
Yes.
Loved that about the Galaxy Note 10.1 that I reviewed a few months ago. That was great. It's perfect for media consumption. It makes perfect sense.
Yep.
It might look a little funky depending on your kind of design aesthetic choices, but ultimately from a usability standpoint, it's great.
Yeah. So very interesting to see the Nexus 10. Again, another device similar to the Nexus 4 that I want to see. I want to get my hands on. I'd like to play with it a little. I love my Nexus 7, and unlike Eileen, I haven't been a smaller tablet guy. I like a larger tablet. I like a 10-inch. Mm-hmm. So, but I fall in love with the 7.
Ooh, this is the one that you're going to get. This is your personal Christmas present, isn't it, Ron?
It might be. I mean, I'm tempted. I'm really tempted. But the thing is, like, I've kind of fallen for the Nexus 7 as well. Like, it's kind of like I've always been into brunettes, but then I went out with a blonde one. So it's like, oh, maybe I was wrong. No, because like the Nexus 7, it fits in the pocket on my bag.
I know. The 10 will not pass the back pocket test.
Yeah, I know. But it's bigger. It's nicer. So I don't know. Yeah.
Got a nice resolution. Looks really glassy.
Yeah.
Did you see the resolution on that tablet? Man.
but moving on.
Yes,
so,
please.
So if any of these devices are tempting to you, the Nexus 4, the Nexus 10, or the Nexus 7, they are all now live in the Google Play Store. You can go buy them now currently. And
you're notified. You get notification.
Yeah. But you can go in and actually actively order them and get, you know, and check out the specs yourself and all that sort of thing. But one aspect that kind of got overlooked in all the announcements and stuff like that what I'm fascinated by.
I love it.
Which is Google also launched a wireless charging orb for the Nexus 4, which is capacitive or whatever, but basically it can charge the battery just by placing the device on the charging base station.
Yeah, there we go.
Thank you. Yes.
Thank you.
Conductive.
It took a village and we got there eventually.
Inductive.
This is cool. It's also kind of harkens back to Palm's Touchstone, which was kind of a big deal, I think, back in 2009.
I remember right around then hanging out with somebody telling me, like, listen, we're never going to have to plug anything in ever again. Like, Duracell had the mat, and there are all those kind of things, and, like, you're just going to put stuff on. I was like, yeah, you're crazy. And here we are. Google is embracing this technology. What I thought was funny is it looks like a Nexus Q cut in half.
I know. It totally does. I love it.
They just took the parts.
Exactly.
They stopped the Q. They took the parts. They're using it for the charger. Yay.
We have all this stock. What on earth are we going to do? Let's make a wireless charger. No, I think this is great, and I love that they're building it into the Nexus 4.
Yep.
I think if you're going to make this work, like the power mat was cool.
Yeah.
That kind of thing is very cool. The problem that I saw with it is you always have to put some big, you know, fat thing and attach it to your phone, and most people aren't going to want to do that.
Right.
You know, because these days these devices are as much style, unfortunately, as function.
Yeah.
So people aren't going to want to change the look of their device like that. Building it into the phone and making it a feature makes it a feature that you're going to, once you experience this, you're probably going to want it in future phones.
I mean, clearly it looks
cool. The demand
goes
up for it.
And like, what's great is that it's a different approach and it's something different. I think that's important. Yeah. Here
we're at the Palm pre-touchstone they are very similar.
I mean, clearly it didn't work with Palm, but I don't think that the charging problem was Palm's problem with the Palm pre. I think
absolutely not.
So, I mean, that's pretty cool. So we'll see if it continues and takes off or not. But,
And then, of course, they had a little ad, but I mean, we don't necessarily need to play the ad start to finish, but it's definitely out there. It's an Ask Me Anything, and it shows off a little bit of the features. It actually does a pretty good job of kind of highlighting the different devices and everything. But yeah, let's dive into 4.2, shall we?
So with the hardware behind us.
Yeah, exactly. So the hardware, and this is kind of what's going to be powering that. 4.2 Jelly Bean. It is official. It will not be Key Lime Pie. Obviously, I imagine Key Lime Pie is going to be the next the next one that we see, the next big one, I don't know, early-ish to mid-ish next year. Boy, that's such a vague prediction on my part. But there you go.
Mark it down. Mark it down.
All right. So there's a lot of cool stuff here. It could have been just a very minor update, but I think there's even more awesome stuff going on here. First of all, new camera app. Chad, if you show that video, the top one, you'll see they continue to kind of tweak this. And what they've done this time is they've taken away all those on-screen buttons that I've always found just kind of ugly.
Yes.
And essentially, wherever you drop your thumb on the camera screen is where the buttons kind of surround your thumb. So it's like you drop your thumb and then you slide over to the option that you need to that you want to do. So it kind of leaves the display showing you everything that's coming through on the camera.
That's really cool.
Completely revamped it. I think it's great. I use the camera all the time, and any improvements that they make to it, I love.
Filters. Look at this. Yeah.
They had me at new camera. Yeah. New camera app.
No, I got to tell you, switching to someone who plays with the exposure a lot to get more light and much out and stuff like that, it's having to push that button, wait for it to slide in, change the exposure, slide it back. Oh, yeah.
It was so much better what they did in Ice Cream Sandwich versus what it was before. Yep. This is just takes it to another level. I love it. Another part of this is something that's pretty cool. So it's Panorama, but it's Panorama 360, very similar to Photosynth, if you've seen that from Microsoft. They call it Photosphere. And this is built into the camera app functionality, and you just kind of, you know, it's very similar to your panorama. This video actually shows it perfectly. You start, and you just kind of zoom around and fill the screen, fill the three dimensions.
Connect the dots. Yeah.
And this allows you later to be able to kind of panorama. Can't talk. The image is if you're there looking around. And you
got all these third-party apps, like that actually is very similar to Camera 360, which I was never able to get right on my Android phone, but it does work on iOS. Well, but a lot of these like three-party app developers are probably like, ugh.
Well, yeah. Well, I mean, this is. I think that's going to be something we're going to see as we go through the rest of these features. Is that a lot of these are really familiar.
Oh yes, there are really familiar functionality.
Apps we've actually featured on the show.
Totally.
All of a sudden, I'm not going to need that app anymore because I can delete that, so I make room on my 16 gig phone.
It's got to be rough if you're a developer, an Android developer, and you're developing functionality that improves the Android experience. I mean, this somewhat puts you out of business. You know, like if they're just going to take the same concepts and put them into the OS, and you're basically being Google's R&D for free sometimes, unless they buy you,
right?
Which does happen, if I was a developer, I would be thinking twice before I put a ton of work into something that might just get, you know.
Well, I mean, but what's the alternative? Then you just don't develop.
Well, no,
because anything you do that's good.
Do an app that works on the operating system. You know what I mean? Do a bit of functionality as opposed to doing an application that modifies the experience of using the phone.
From Google's perspective?
Yeah.
I mean, from a developer's perspective.
Oh, yeah.
This shouldn't stop you from developing.
Oh, no, it shouldn't. Yeah, I know. But it's also interesting to see the embracing of innovation.
Totally.
I'm sorry.
Totally. No, completely. It's a very, very good point because a lot of these things, it's exactly what you're talking about. So Photosphere, I think it's pretty cool. You can actually share your spheres, your photospheres, to Google Maps. So if you go to a neat location and you're thinking about it, going Mount Rushmore or whatever, you can pull up other people's kind of panoramic 360 degree views of those places. I think that's pretty neat. There you go. And you can kind of swipe around it and look as if you were there. That donut looked delicious if it were real.
Let's go to widgets.
Yes, widgets. Widgets on lock screen. So I totally missed this and then caught it randomly in the video, the Verge video. Which is excellent. Adding widgets to your lock screen.
It's just because I am like that person in the things that Android people say video, and he says, oh, but you're going to love the widgets or something like that. I'm that person. So now I'm super excited by the widgets on the lock screen. Yay.
Yeah. I mean, you can just embed them in the lock screen. Since then, I've been thinking about what kind of widgets I would actually embed into my lock screen. Mm-hmm. Obviously, it's up to you. It's up to the user to determine whether they want to do what you're seeing right now, which is embed your Gmail inbox
to your lock screen. I don't think it'll be Gmail for me.
Yeah.
I don't want somebody accidentally getting my phone, like if I get my phone ripped off and then Gmail is like out in front ready for somebody to...
That's my big criticism about widgets on the lock screen is that at what point is it just you, the phone?
Yeah, it's just another set of home screens.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so, and as someone who uses the code to lock my phone, like, I don't really want to expose anything there. Totally. But then again, I also don't, you know, unlocking the phone, opening up the camera, going for it. I mean, it would be great to just have a one button go to camera, you know, or one button go to email or something. Yeah, so,
right.
Yeah.
But yeah, that looked pretty cool. Quick settings. We talked about that on a previous episode. Android Police had kind of done some digging and found hints at a quick settings approach, and that is indeed here. I think when we were talking about it before,
this,
we had
the
shown
double
that
pane.
The notification was down, and then you swipe down from the top again, or there's that button in this case, but you swipe down from the top again, and it'll reveal it.
Yes, and that gets rid of the app that I profiled, One Tap Quick Bar.
Right.
Yeah. I was just like, oh, poor guys. They've got that all built in. But yeah, anyway.
It happens.
That's cool.
And then
a two-finger swipe down, as you just saw in the video, instead of pulling down your notifications, pulls down your quick settings.
Yep.
That makes good sense. I can't wait to use that. That'll be really handy. Multi-user support. This is only for tablets, not for phones. Not quite sure I understand why it wouldn't be both, but maybe it has something to do with carriers. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe. It makes more, but it makes sense on the, you know, I don't know. I feel like that one makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
I'm okay with that, but
on the tablet,
yeah,
no, totally. I don't know why I would want to use it on my phone, to be honest.
I think because you see, the phone is more of a personal device, and it's kind of one that, you know, I'm very rarely hand someone else my phone to use, whereas you might hand your daughter the tablet or that sort of thing.
Totally, so, the tablet ends up being a shared household device.
Surprised by this one,
yeah. So speaking of features that seem to have been lifted from other apps,
This is the only, it's the gesture you're about to mention, but this is the only feature when I watch them describe, they just, you know, they were kind of saying, well, we don't care about other, we're not trying to compare to other apps. I just felt like this was the only explanation that I felt was a little BS, because it is swipe.
Well, yeah, but also SwiftKey just launched the same functionality.
Exactly.
So the idea of gesture typing isn't something unheard of. I mean, we've seen it with swipe. There have been other applications out there. SwiftKey just did it. I'm not surprised that Google did it. I just didn't see it coming. Because they've been improving their keyboard, and that kind of, this requires them to admit that people want to use keyboards differently than what they thought they would, which is great to see them do it. We see them embracing, and clearly they put their own kind of Google spin on it, where you do the connection and then the word comes up at the end of the line that you draw, which is a neat little thing. But it's clearly swipe inspired.
So. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So there was that. A few other things. Screen sharing using Miracast, so you could share your screen directly to an HD TV, for example, that supports that. Something called Daydream, which is a way to incorporate things that you have on your phone when it's docked in places like the charging orb. So if dock it in the charging orb, it pulls up. It's kind of like a slideshow type. Yeah. View of your gallery pictures, just as one example, or you can make it a little bit more useful than that. I don't really know a whole lot about Daydream. And finally, you alluded to this earlier, Ron, the unified operating system look for both tablets and phones.
Yep.
Heard a little bit about this before the announcement even happened, and that's the Android Police link that I have in there, which does kind of a good example, good job of comparing kind of what we're looking at. But so this is now, right? So your tablet kind of follows the same design paradigm as the phone has. And what you see down here is kind of what we used to have: four corners, information spread out amongst all four corners. And now what they've done, if you scroll down, is kind of unify it into a couple of different places and give you constant access to those shortcuts down at the bottom.
For some reason, I was fine with this on the Nexus 7, the way we've been using it, because I think because it was a smaller, more phone-like screen.
Mm.
But at the Nexus 10 and in the landscape mode, it's just like, oh, it's just that stretched. It's good that you're unifying the approach. I just think that the 10-inch suffers a little on that approach. That's my only complaint on it. But I would rather have unification than not unification. So,
yeah, and I think that's it. I mean, that's just a big part of what this is all about. Matthias Duarte had a few comments on Google Plus. He posted something out and people were just asking him questions about things. And he did talk about this. He addressed a question about it. He said what mattered most of all in their testing was muscle memory, keeping the buttons where you expect them, not no matter how you hold the device. The Jelly Bean navigation buttons work equally well for left-handers and right-handers, one-handed, two-handed, blah, blah, blah. Everybody can use it. By unifying the design, we are now able to put notifications and quick settings right where you'd expect them. So it's all about keeping it consistent, which can be a complaint, you know, about Android.
Well, I'm willing to admit that they're much smarter designers than I am, and I haven't used it yet. So I'm just saying, initially seeing the screenshots and seeing it up there, I was like, oh, that doesn't really get me excited.
Yeah.
But then again, I wasn't excited when I got the Zoom with Honeycomb and the tablet kind of approach. I think it's just that landscape view. Mm-hmm. I'm just not a big fan of it. You know, and it works so nicely on the 7 because I mainly always use it.
It's always portrait.
Sure. So. Who knows?
Yeah, I'll be curious to play once we play around with it like that for an extended period of time to see what we think.
And this is where you pull it out from under the table and tell us you got us all Nexus.
And 10, one more thing. Everybody gets a 10. No, I don't have.
Oh,
sorry. I wish.
Jason.
I wish I had that kind of pull.
All right,
Eileen,
well,
you got some cool stuff.
Yeah, we've got an update that you can get your hands on now. Update the search app for Android. Google now has new cards, new updates. So, for instance, there's Gmail update. So, if your flight confirmations go to your Gmail, your hotel reservations, restaurant bookings, event tickets, and package tracking emails, that'll show up as a card if you want it to. And
from your Gmail inbox, I love that.
Yep. I'm really excited because I'm actually flying to LA, so I get to see on Thursday. I get to see how this all works, you know, with my car reservation and my hotel and my flight. So I'm super excited. There are some more local attractions and photo opportunity proximity updates to Google Now. I've just noticed a lot of things like stories and news. All of a sudden, you know, I've been doing a lot of searching on Hurricane Sandy, and like one of the first card on my phone is, you know, a news bulletin on Hurricane Sandy. Also, there's an exercise card. One thing that has been updated, which I'm super stoked, is that now you can say create event. Going to dinner Sunday, November 11th at 8 p.m. with Ron and Jason. Boom, in your calendar. Very excited.
That is awesome. Cool. And that's something that you've asked for a long time ago. It's
a long time ago. And we came up with that roundabout way. Corey Teague had shown us a roundabout way to do it. Now you can just do it via Google Now. So update your search app and check it out. I believe, though, this is only for Jelly Bean. Is that correct? Yeah.
I think so.
Yes. Only for Jelly Bean.
The only OS that can get Google Now.
Right.
But Hugo Barrow also said, who's the director of product management, that Google has been sort of it's been sort of a slow roll. So a lot of these features that we've been asking for, you know, like they did the sports scores after Google Now launched. And now we've got these new set of cards. I mean, I think they're just evolving. And instead of like flooding all the users with all of these cards, they're just taking a slow, and steady approach. And that's okay. You know, now I'm very happy. I just wanted that calendar voice alert, and I got it. Yay!
Well, and it's funny, now that we're thinking about Google Now and all that stuff, two little notes on it that I have that are not related to the update, but one kind of is. One is I was down in L.A. recently, and I saw the little image on top of Google Now change when I was in Santa Monica. It was a shot of the beach and the thing. And so I'm noticing now. I actively open it to see what that picture is going to be. But the one thing about Google Now that drives me nuts is that even today – Google Now is telling me that the Giants beat the Tigers 2 days ago.
Yeah.
Like, it needs to remember, like, when I swipe a card, I'm done with it. You know, like,
Agreed. Yeah. Totally.
If I actively swipe either the notification or the card, means I got it. Don't keep telling me over and over again, especially with the traffic and stuff like that, where I'm glad you're giving it to me. Like, I love the Google search. Like, I searched for a restaurant and then went out on the street in Santa Monica and pulled it up, and I was like, oh, there it is, you know, and it was very accessible. But 3 hours later, you're still telling me where that restaurant is, and I don't need to know. So, and I'm sure it's probably a setting or something like that. I need to go deep into the settings. For example, I went into the settings today and just turned off the sports card because now I'm done until baseball starts again, and I'll go back and turn it back on.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. It's interesting, though. I love Google Now. I love it. I think it's great, though. So
The Verge had a really good detailed kind of insight into Google Now and just kind of Google's plan for this. And like you said, Eileen, I think all the teams, it sounds like, well, okay, just to back up, Google Now came from a 20% project.
Cool. Mm.
And nice. It was just one of those things that, you know, in retrospect, you realize just how integral it is to tying all of these many things that Google does together. So they've had, you know, hundreds of different teams throughout the company, you know, coming up with ways that they can integrate their functionality into Google Now and have it pull from that knowledge base and everything. And I think it's perfect. I mean, it makes total sense that they would step this out slowly, because Google Now has the potential to be very, not invasive, because that's kind of has a negative connotation to it, but it really kind of takes over in some ways how you use your phone potentially. Yep. And if they were to just roll it out and say, all right, everything is on, you know, and from nowhere, suddenly, you know, it's telling you everything. You know, that they've integrated all 200 ideas at once, it would be very overwhelming. So at least this way people are getting used to how it is used in their daily lives.
Yeah, I dig it.
Yeah,
I just used it today on the drive up. I was looking for movie show times, and I was like, ooh, I should look to see when that movie's playing. And normally I go to the browser, go to Google slash movies or whatever. I just opened Google Now. I said movie show time, San Francisco, and it just gave me the search results, and I could scroll through, found Seven Psychopaths, and now I know when it's playing. So
excellent.
Very cool. So moving on from Google Now, the announcement
we're still talking
ended.
About stuff.
some updates on the Google Play Store side of things. So now folks in Canada, the UK, France, Spain, and Australia, you can buy movies in Google Play. I know you're dying to get Transformers. Also in the UK, France, Germany, Italy, and Spain on November 13th, we'll be getting Play Music.
Oh, man. Yay. It's about time.
Yep. And a somewhat of a big deal as part of that is that Google finally inked a deal with Warner Music Group, and so now Google Play Music has all the major labels present. So if you are a fan of Red Hot Chili Peppers or Neil Young or Green Day or anything that's on through Warner Music, God help you, but you'll be able to get it. So there you go.
Dang, Ron.
Sorry. How about
James Bond? You guys can buy some James Bond movies now overseas.
Yep, there you go. So
that's a better one.
But some more interesting news on the Google Music side of things and the Play Music side of things. They rolled out Play Music will be rolling out Play Music kind of match functionality, where as opposed to having to upload your entire library to Google Music like I did over the span of 7 days.
Yes.
Do you remember that?
Yes. How could I forget that?
So now you'll be able to just scan your iTunes library and match it to your Google Play Music library, and just avoiding uploading at all, which I might just wipe out my Google Music and redo. Just because
then it syncs up to their images and all that, right?
Yep.
Okay,
yeah,
this goes back to what we were talking about before.
You're tuning in.
I didn't mean to jump the gun on that one, but I thought I was coming up with the idea for you. I was like, oh, wait a minute, this is where you're
I
at.
Thought about that, yeah. Okay. So
that makes perfect sense, actually. Yeah. That's very tempting.
So, yeah. So it's available in Europe now, but it's going to launch in the U.S. Soon after. So we're waiting for that. I'm very excited about that.
Yeah, long overdue. Good that they have it. If you match a song to their library, does that still count as one against your 20,000? In other words, is your 20,000 songs 20,000 that you have stored with them, or 20,000 that you have synced with them?
I don't know the answer to that.
Yeah, I don't know the answer to that.
You have a lot of good questions.
Well, maybe someone that knows the answer can let us know. AAA at twit.tv. I honestly looked for a little bit and I couldn't find out, and I'd be curious to know.
Yeah, well, we'll have to find out. We'll play with it. Lord knows I'm going to play with it. I might set up a new account, actually. Anyway.
Ooh, is this going to solve your music issues, Ron?
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. Because the thing is, I want to get rid of iTunes. I want off of iTunes. And right now, my music infrastructure is I buy on Amazon. And I download through Amazon's daemon, and that puts it into iTunes. And then the Google Music daemon picks it up and uploads it to Google Music. So I need to replicate that flow. Now, honestly, the solution is buy my music on Google Play and not download it at all.
Right.
But
they don't always have the best prices.
Although recently the last two albums I bought have been exactly the same as Amazon. So maybe they're wising up and maybe they're doing some more price matching.
Right.
But the big problem is that I want those local files, and the Google Music, at least on Mac OS X, the daemon just lets you download your entire library, or you just download like all recently uploaded songs. You can't choose what you download from. So
should be able to do it.
Yeah, no, I played with it this weekend. It's very blunt. I'll show you after the show. Yeah,
interesting.
So there's still some issues to work out with that. But we were talking about before the show, I was having problems with the Google, with the cover images and what size they need to be. And if you're, as Jason mentioned, if you're matching to their library, then that takes away the need to manage metadata or anything like that. So
right.
It's curious.
That's great.
So, little side road. Let's talk. Speaking of a sidebar, one question that came up earlier in the show and also before we did the show was, so Hurricane Sandy comes, cancels the event. They rolled out the announcements anyway. They went with the Verge videos. And so it brings up the question, which is a very good question, actually. There's a conversation over on Electric Pig, which is a British-based site, asking, you know, did they really need an event? Was there fanfare? Was fanfare necessary? Did this launch go off successfully in the kind of non-event kind of manner?
It's hard to say in light of all of this that it was necessary, because it got a lot. I mean, it was top of the news cycle. Now, mind you,
yeah, I was gonna
yesterday
say
it was very overshadowed with news stuff.
It was very much overshadowed. Yeah. I'm torn about this because clearly they got it out correctly. If they didn't have that Verge coverage, I wonder. I mean, so like, talk about lucky happenstance or whatever.
Yeah, Verge folks are stoked.
Yeah, giving the Verge that much access. But I feel like not as many people. Admittedly, the hurricane makes this hard to compare. But I feel as if not as many people were not talking about it because there was no event associated with it. And this idea of an event that everyone, all eyes are on Google for this hour, as opposed to this kind of quiet, slow rollout of content through the web. Mm. I don't know if an event is really necessary, but it certainly helps when it comes to word of mouth and attention.
Hmm.
But how many people do you think are really watching the event besides enthusiasts who are going to get excited about it anyways, and the press who's going to cover it?
Right, but the thing is that how much of the general public's interest is driven by the excitement of the press, who are determining how much excitement to give around it. So if you've got there's a reason why Apple does that at Yerba Buena. There's a reason why they have these big, the keynote and the speech, because I think I'm somewhat unique in terms of perspective, because while the majority of my friends are tech savvy, I have two camps of social circles that I run in.
Sure.
I run in the technology circle, which of course all eyes are on these events, but I'm also, you know, in the kind of comics and comic book thing, and it's pretty much equal the number of people I'm seeing on Twitter watching those Apple events. They are all eyes are on that, and they want to know what they need to order next, and they want to know stuff like that. Now, admittedly, is an Amazon event necessary? Is a Barnes & Noble event necessary? Is an AT&T event necessary? But I think Google is in the major leagues.
Yeah.
And I think that it's not necessary, but it certainly helps because – and admittedly, again, the hurricane screws this all up, but none of my non-tech friends were talking about this yesterday. Mm-hmm. Nobody. Nobody.
But again, it's because of the hurricane.
Yeah.
And I don't think that they would have been dumb to try and put something together, I think. And I think it was good enough to me to at least get that information. Like you said, there's all these NDAs. There's all this. Everybody knows it's coming out. You know, I just think this is a special circumstance, just like it was last year. And maybe it hurt them a little bit, but... I don't know. I'm over these events. Who cares that Jessica Alba was
too.
On stage for that stupid Windows?
That was kind of embarrassing.
It was embarrassing. They may have saved themselves from some embarrassment. I don't know. I don't know what they were planning. I don't know that anything at this point is going to top skydiving outside of Moscone Center for I/O. So.
True.
Hey, new Nexus devices, and I think in their perspective. I'm sure all of the executives, maybe the executives were all in New York. They're not going to, they're thinking about what the heck is happening, you know, to the East Coast at this point. And that's honestly what's more important. So,
which I agree. I'm not saying the hurricane was less important or anything like that. And admittedly, that's what I'm saying. That kind of blankets the whole thing. I mean, the irony of me making this argument is that I hate the Apple events. Not because I hate Apple, because I don't. Again, I don't,
oh, yeah,
you know,
like, you're just
we,
like,
we've been, not to revisit that, but it's just like the mass attention
the pomp and circumstance
and all that sort of stuff. And to your point that you made is that I really wonder, you know, I often have these conversations just in general marketing and PR with my friends who work in marketing PR, whether or not these companies need the blogosphere, whether or not they need to drum up CNET and Gadget and Twit and Rev3 and everybody into a frenzy, or what if they just roll stuff out the way Google did and just, you know, and have a focused launch, give the information where people need it, and see what happens. I think this ended up being an interesting test case against that.
I would completely agree with that. I'm very, very happy that Google didn't postpone and do another announcement that they planned in another week and a half. I think in this case, I think I beg to differ a little bit, not from a circumstantial perspective, in that, like, I don't really know or talk to a lot of people that are outside of the technology sphere, or at least have since yesterday. So I don't know from that perspective, but I know from a press perspective, this got a lot of attention, I think I feel like it got as much attention as it probably would have if there were an event. You still got all the information.
I don't think so, and I can't measure. Yeah, and the thing is, I can't measure it because of the disaster, because of the hurricane stuff. But I don't think it did. I don't think it would have. I mean, because I'm going by the gauge of do people who aren't in San Francisco, are they talking about it? That's mainly my kind of my barometer, because everybody here, we're all talking about it. But, you know, like, so I kind of wish this didn't, I mean, of course, for many reasons, I wish the hurricane didn't happen, but, yeah.
Of course.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course.
But it's an interesting question, though.
Very happy that Google didn't postpone it. Realized they probably didn't have a choice.
And it was funny because someone in the chat room, because they're talking about it, and someone in the chat room said, you know, well, The Verge could have edited the video to Google's dislike, or, you know, could have, like, because it was editorial, but... As someone who works for a content site that works directly with the companies that you're promoting, like, that wasn't going to happen. Like, this was a coordinated, like, they went to The Verge, and The Verge liked what they saw, and they said, and the, you know, like, if it, admittedly, I'm not questioning The Verge's editorial integrity here, but when you have that level of integration, there was no surprises by on Google's side. Google knew what The Verge was doing, and that was kind of part of, and I don't know this for sure, I'm just saying from my experience with other companies doing similar types of things.
Well, I mean, it's a no-brainer that they had impressive access to this stuff, and they created most of the media that most people saw about it, because there was no big, like you said, big event to show it off. All you had is the ad, and then you had all these looks into it based on a visit that they had to the campus. So yeah, absolutely. They were given unprecedented access. Highly recommend checking out the video if you haven't seen it already, because there's some really interesting stuff in there. But it is an interesting question to be made about the coordination of all of this, for sure. All right. How about we talk about hardware that doesn't have anything to do with the stuff we talked about. Wow, I feel like we've done a show's worth already.
I know. I feel like it, too. I feel like we should just skip to the arena.
I know, yeah. I'm kind of poofed.
That was a lot of stuff. Well,
let's go quickly.
Yeah, let's go quickly, because we did go a little long on that. I had spent some time way back when with the LG Spectrum, and I liked it. It was a mid-range phone on Verizon. They have the LTE Spectrum 2 joining Verizon's lineup for $99. And again, you know, it's right in that kind of current mid-range phone area. 4.7-inch HD IPS display, 1.5 gigahertz dual-core processor, 16 gigs of internal, and 32 gigs of micro SD expansion potential. So, but it is launching with Ice Cream Sandwich, hopefully updated to Jelly Bean sometime soon. And the design looks very similar to what I had played with the first version of the Spectrum. But I liked the Spectrum. I thought it was good. I realized in retrospect that was my only experience with an LG device. I wonder how it would stack up, you know, what I would think about the next LG device, the Nexus 4. But
hey, man, that $99 price point, that's a machine. Yeah. When we look at those numbers of Android penetration or whatever, it's a lot of $99 phones are in there. So
yeah, not to mention
seems decent, and then the Droid M seems decent as well. So for that same price point, so
totally, and you're getting access to the LTE network for $99 too. That's kind of a a big deal as well. So check it out.
Ooh, okay. Spicy time.
Spicy, dirty talk. You know, and of course it has to do with Samsung, my favorite. There's actually three new ads that Samsung released recently. You may have seen it on your television, or maybe you've checked out the viral video online. Chad, we should show the first one if you've got that there. I don't think it's only 30 seconds. I really don't think I need to say more after we watched the ad. But
let's do it.
The page is loading. It's not going fast enough.
It's too hot. Yeah. It's too hot for the show.
Come on.
Oh, my gosh.
Go.
Is it trying to censor us?
I know.
Oh, my gosh.
It's in your refresh. It killed. The page died.
Wow. Look at that.
Oh, no.
We didn't get clearance with Leo to play something this hot and dirty on the show.
Something is broken here. I'm gonna I'm gonna go try to find it on YouTube. 1 second.
Wow. Here, talk about a tease.
I know. Right?
Wow, here I am.
Right.
Posted this, what was it, Sunday? I don't remember when it was, like right when it launched, and I got like 1,000+ ones on my Google Plus page for this. A ton of shares for this, and all I just said was, oh, I think this is really funny, or maybe I should go to bed. I don't know. And then the next morning I looked it up and I'm like, oh, everybody thinks it's funny too, because it is.
Yeah.
It's pretty well done. Hey, they did a good job of getting everybody to talk about it. That's for sure.
There's three videos. There's this one that we're going to show of a family and the husband is leaving on a trip. There's another video of two people, I think, outdoors in front of like a bus stop or something. And then the last one is sort of date night. And I'll just describe that one as just sort of two people on a couch and a guy is using his Samsung phone to play music on a speaker. It turns out to be like the Spice Girls or something, and sort of embarrassing. And the girl looks at him and says, oh, I can help you with that. And so she touches her phone with his phone. They both have Galaxy S3s, of course. And so she passes the music to him, which I don't know why she just doesn't play the music directly to the speaker. But anyway, passes it to him. He plays it. It's some sexy music. And now the date night saved, but that's not as good as the video that Chad's trying to pull.
Oh my gosh, it's like everything is just broken.
All right. Speaking of Samsung ads, I got a very funny response from someone on Twitter in response to last week's show, where someone who will remain nameless on Twitter just randomly trolled me and said, it was such a sad display from a fanboy on all that Android. It says, you laugh at the Samsung attack ads and then you go after Apple. How sad. And I was like, oh, all right. Well, I guess that's a valid opinion or whatever. Then his immediate next tweet is, you're the reason I'm starting to get into Android. It's like, I love your objective viewpoints.
Wait a minute. What? That's so confusing.
Yeah, it was funny.
I'm so confused. Yeah.
But the Samsung ads, I think they're great. I've seen the family one literally on TV. And like, it's a good commercial. They're good commercials.
So essentially, it's a family, and they the guy's leaving to go on a trip, and she's
found
like,
it. Here we go. Jeez.
I was going to describe.
It happens. Don't worry, it happens. It's not you, Chad.
And it has. I have to pull it up on Internet Explorer and for it to work. So anyway,
what year is it?
Enjoy.
Finally, maybe.
Bye, Daddy.
Bye, girls. Love you.
Daddy, we made you a video for your trip.
Okay.
Here you go.
Aw, thanks, girl.
It works so easily.
Hey, I also made you a video.
Aw, that's so sweet.
You probably shouldn't watch it on the plane.
What if he accidentally opens up? What if he accidentally opens up that video when he thinks he's playing
Samsung Galaxy S3?
My other one.
My favorite moment in this is the moment that she just like this right here.
Yep.
I made a video.
Yeah, no, it's very good acting. It's very she did good.
And he looks
so
at her.
Good.
Yeah.
And then if you look at him, he makes this cool face when he's like, yeah.
Yeah.
And drives off.
Samsung Galaxy.
That is the best ad.
I mean, I got to hand it to Samsung for coming out strong. I mean, arguably, they're like, you know, neck and neck with Apple, obviously.
They're neck and
neck. That it just was hilarious. You just got to laugh when you see that video. I mean, I think it's great. Now, I don't know how long that video is. I mean, they tapped it really quick. Wouldn't it take longer than that normally?
I don't know. You know,
hey.
We should really test it. Leo was mentioning this earlier. I bet that what happened is when they tapped it, added it to a queue to start transferring through
and then
the internet.
He drove away and right. He didn't get the whole thing.
No, I think we should recreate it. We should see how long it would take.
I think it doesn't have to be like, it's not Wi-Fi Direct or anything. It's just like.
It's NFC, right?
No,
you can't trust the data.
Just,
that. Yeah.
They just communicate through NFC and then one is going up to the cloud and it's pulling down from the cloud.
The location of the video, right. Okay.
Right. I don't know. We need to test
this, but we need to get a video first to test with it. So if you know.
Why are you looking at me?
Do we need to get that kind of video to test this with?
Well, it needs to be. I mean, scientific method. Scientific. It needs to be, right?
For science.
Interesting. All right, cool.
I am your science officer.
Yeah.
The show is going to get a lot more interesting, I have a feeling.
I like All About Android After Dark.
That might be the title. All right. All About Android After Dark is jumping into the Android arena.
And here we go.
To enter, one lives. Android arena.
Boom. Bust through that wall.
There we go.
All right.
Question.
Last week, we had an arena where we...
arena, apparently.
Where we covered four apps, including Chad, who cleaned the floor with all of us. Well, actually, it was pretty close between Lapsit, which was Chad's app, and Tunnel Bear, which was Eileen's app.
Look at Eileen. Thought she wasn't going to do well. That wasn't even going to have an app last week, and comes in second.
Thank you, Canada. Yeah. Thank you, India. Thank you, Brazil. Brazil's
thank you,
back.
Canada.
Told you, yours was a worldwide app. Mm-hmm. By the way, Jason, you may have to do all my screens because any page I open just dies.
Oh, okay.
Wow. Do you have my screen?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Okay, I'll do
that
from
now on.
You
need my app then. Yeah.
Okay, no problem. Yeah. So let me full screen that. Okay, so just a real quick recap. Lapsit, first place with 34%. Tunnel Bear VPN, 29% in second place. Twisty, which was my, Play Zork game.
Yeah, good.
23%. And third place. And then Dayframe came in fourth place, 14%. So there we go. Oh, sorry. Oh,
there we go.
this could happen a couple of times.
Yeah,
welcome.
I'm trying to reboot this computer over.
So, all right. Well, I will go first. So to continue my losing streak, I will. In my search for apps that do different things and stuff like this, I came across this one, and I did one of those. Oh, kind of reactions. And it's a free app. As far as I can tell, it's only been downloaded, I think, less than 500 times. So maybe you guys can blow it up. It is called Auto SMS Sender. And basically what it allows you to do is schedule SMS texts to go out, which is fascinating when you think about the ramifications of this. I'm not going to demo it on my phone because that would involve showing actual phone numbers. So Jason's going to drive for me and Chad will zoom in so you can see. But it's a very, very simple interface. You can just start a new SMS message. You can look at the history of messages you've done. You can look at the history of messages that have been delivered. You can look at your schedule. And that's pretty much all you need to do. So if you go to the next screen, and I'm going to catch up with you. This is a screen where you can enter enter your message. Very simple. You can hit the little icons on the right of the two box, and you can pull up your contacts. You can send to multiple contacts, so you don't need to be limited to just one person. Send it to a group. You can type in your message, and then underneath the message box, you select the date and time you want to send it. You can send out a repeat message. So if for some reason you needed to text somebody every Monday at noon, like to go walk the dog or something like that, you can do that. And then you can either add it to your queue or send it immediately. So it can become an SMS sender, basically. If you go to the next screen, you can see this is the list of schedules. And these are just all the messages that you have scheduled, what their occurrence is, who they're going to, and what the repetition is. Next screen shows you the delivery log, and it just shows you which of your messages have been sent and then actually delivered, or does that need a SMS delivery confirmation? You can see an individual report on the individual message, so you see who got it, what the message was, and when it was delivered. And then that is it on the screenshots. But what's interesting is there's also a bunch of tags that you can use, so you can embed location, you can embed time, you can embed lat long. So really the ramifications of this are really interesting. It could be something as simple as, I never want to forget anyone in my family's birthday, so I'm going to send an SMS message on their birthday and have it repeat yearly. And I will always send at 7 a.m.
always say the same
happy
thing.
Birthday. Yeah, exactly. So you could do that. I know for me and maybe Eileen and Jason, you guys share this. Oftentimes we go with crews to events, to cover events like CES or Comic-Con or things like that. And often I'm sending text message. We normally use WhatsApp for like group messaging, but to announce a call time to tell everyone like, hey, at 6 p.m. tonight, I want to send a message to everyone to let everyone know that tomorrow's call time is 8 a.m. and where to be. I want to, but it's like it's 3 o'clock now. I don't want to forget to do this later. So it's a great way to manage a team if you're managing a team. It's also really interesting for education, for to send, you know, robocalls, as they call them, when like school's closing or something like that. If you're on a teacher side of things, it's great to schedule a message to a lot of people. School just let out, pick up your children in half an hour, like that sort of messaging. The applications of this app is kind of mind-boggling once you start thinking about what you can do with it. My only criticism with it is that you only you see the log of what you sent in the app. Any responses come into your SMS application. So, for example, when I tested this earlier, I scheduled a text to go out to someone. They responded to it, and it just came in through the messaging app. So, area of improvement, it could be a full-featured SMS app that has a scheduler attached to it. That would be neat. But as of right now, it's super, super powerful, and it's free. So that's pretty neat. So if you ever felt that you wanted to schedule an SMS message, this now you can. And I've totally had that thought. I've totally had that, oh, I don't want to forget to tell someone this, and then I forget to send the text later on. So very simple in that. So it is called Auto SMS Sender. It's free. It's by the folks at DRC Infotech. And like I said, it's only got 500 to 1,000 installs. So it's on the verge. So we can help put it over. So go check it out.
Yay!
Yeah.
Auto SMS Sender. Excellent.
Thank you for driving.
Yeah, absolutely. Happy to do it. Chat, is my device thing right over here, I think? I don't know.
Yeah, we didn't set up.
Okay,
yeah.
Cool. My app, I was scrambling, and then I found this app, and it does something that I've kind of wanted to get back into my phone for a while. For the longest time, I used, I think it was around Gingerbread, where they integrated that news and weather widget that would kind of cycle through like news headlines, and then you could tap through it. And then somewhere along the line, I stopped using it because a lot of times what I would see up there just wasn't kind of always relevant to the sources that I wanted. Not to mention, once you get into Ice Cream Sandwich and Jelly Bean, there's a different kind of view aesthetic to the OS, and I wanted something that kind of tied into that. So I found it's an app, but it also has some great widgets called Minimal Reader Pro. And this is, there's a free version as well as a 99-cent version that you can find on the Play Store. I would recommend getting the 99-cent version because it gives you access to more widgets, which is really the reason why.
It'd be great if you gave you more access to more witches.
Witches.
That would be, I think, right, this time
especially
of year, too.
This time of year, yeah. Yep.
Oh, no, and yep. I'm realizing my brightness is really dialed down, so let me boost that
the
up.
The witches could help you with that, actually.
Thank you. Yeah. It's perfect timing for the witches. So what you see right here is a widget that I've created, and essentially it syncs with your Google Reader. And, you know, you can set up all of your different refresh times and everything, but this is a little widget that you can kind of scroll through. I've set it for, pretty small two-block kind of area on this screen, but I'll go ahead and scroll over here and just add a new one here. And it syncs, as I said, with your Google Reader. So any sources that you have in your Google Reader, it kind of pulls in automatically for you. You've got a bunch of different widget styles that you can do. I'll go ahead and do the scroll one for 4.0. And it says no news because I haven't told it which sources that I want it to pull. So here we have all of my Android sources. I'll go ahead and check mark a couple of these. And it's actually syncing as I check these here. I'm trying to do this sideways. All right, so I'll just go with those four. So you can add whatever sources you want to it. You've got more options over here, whether you want your thumbnails to appear in there, filter by the age, how many entries you want to actually sync at any given point. And then this is where it gets into the customization. So this is a great widget for kind of, you know, any of the UI tweakers out there. Some people get really into, you know, customizing their home screen. And this gives you all the ability at a much deeper level than I would probably use of changing the color and kind of settings of everything around this widget. Right now is transparent dark background. I'll go ahead and put that on carbon, and the background, I like it on dark, but you can make it totally transparent or give it that nice glassy effect, put a border around it, change all the colors to match whatever the aesthetic of your current layout actually is. And then there's a lot of other buttons that you can hide or show depending on how you want it to be. Update the widget, go home, and there it is.
Now, I've got a little bit larger text than maybe I would use all the time, but I'll go ahead and resize this. And now this page is dedicated to news sources, and I can always just kind of go over here and see what the latest news sources are. Refresh for me here. When you're doing shows where you talk about news all the time, it's nice to see this stuff everywhere you look. So it's nice to just have it refreshing and updating for you. And then, of course, if you want to go in, it actually takes you into the app, which I would imagine the developers would also want me to show off. But I'm a big fan of the widgets more than, you know, what I would use the app for. The app is obviously great for allowing you to get into the rest of the information that's tied to the widget that you actually pulled up. But you can see it's kind of follows the Holo kind of a design aesthetic for all of your different sources, and you can flip through. It's a nice approach. I would say that the app itself isn't necessarily breaking ground as far as this approach is concerned. I've gotten very used to kind of the Flipboard approach, although this gives you a look into a lot more sources at one time. So if this is kind of the way you like to consume your news, it might be the better approach. And then, of course, if I've read all these, I can just go ahead and mark them all as read. It has an offline mode so that you can pre-download full articles, including feeds that truncate content. You can have it download those articles outside of the feeds for offline viewing, which is great. Just overall, it's a pretty nice minimal reader. That's probably why they call it minimal reader, right? So there you go. But ultimately, I'm just kind of a big fan of the widget. I like the look of it. It's very kind of slick and out of the way, and you can customize it to your heart's content. So that is Minimal Reader, free version, as well as a 99-cent version. I would recommend getting the 99-cent version and getting all of the widgets. And that's it. Minimal Reader.
Cool. There you go.
All right, what you got?
Mine's going to be really quick. I'm not trying to pander to the situation that is going on back east, but I seriously have not downloaded any new apps, and I was kind of checking out a hurricane app from American Red Cross, and then I kind of stumbled upon all the different apps that they have. So my app is actually First Aid American Red Cross, and it's free. And you know what was really interesting about it? And don't show the video because it's iPhone, Chad, but you could just show the screenshot since I'm not there. It's really thorough in terms of all the information here. Maybe you don't want to learn all this information, but in case you do, you can learn about all various kinds of allergies, asthma attack, bleeding, broken bones, you know, what to do in a situation with burns, first degree burns, what to do. And they have videos associated with, a section on what to learn in case of emergency. There's a preparation tab too, in case of drought, earthquake, fire, flooding, and you go into any of those tab, and they have probably everything that if you went to the American Red Cross and you got a pamphlet or flyer, you could find everything on here mobily. Emergency, you can get push notifications sent to your phone if there's some sort of national disaster. Even in the More tab, what I ended up doing was downloading the hurricane app that's associated with American Red Cross. And then there's actually a little tab there to donate. So I went in there, and then it says donate online or donate via text. I hit the donate via text. It launched my text message, and then I donated $10 to the American Red Cross. I thought this is like a really kind of full service. There's some news and information, and they have like photos of Hurricane Sandy relief and first aid training and all this stuff. And then it gives you, hey, by the way, we have a hurricane app. By the way, we have an earthquake app. You know what? I'm probably going to download the earthquake app because that's what's, that's what happens out here most often on the West Coast. But I just thought it was interesting. A lot of really, really good information that I didn't expect. I just kind of downloaded it and I thought, well, look at that. If you don't know, in terms of the hurricane app, which is not related to the app that I'm putting in the arena, but it is not the app that I'm putting in the arena, but it is related. It's giving you, a preparation tab. There's even a little test area to challenge your knowledge. Maybe you've read through the app and then they're giving you like a little quick quiz to see if you really know your stuff in case of emergency. And then there's like again alerts that you could receive, and like a tab for shelters if there's a shelter nearby you in a situation. So I don't know, I think it's full service. I think for me, in terms of educating myself. I think this is very handy. I carry my mobile phone everywhere. And you never know. I mean, what if you're out and about and look, there's even a little tab for stings and bites. What if you get bit by a tick or something? Oh, no. So
what am I going to do?
What is it? You mean, maybe you haven't even seen a tick before. There's a picture right there on the swab. Oh, there you go.
There it is.
Go something else. Zombies. What if you get bit by zombies?
Zombies. Nope.
No.
Sorry.
Dude.
Might
Sorry,
be folded
dude.
Into something else.
Right, but. Yeah, probably, yeah.
But, I mean, you know, there's stuff here that could be handy if you're just alone or you're not home. And I don't know. I mean, it's always handy to have guides, I think, on your mobile phone. Maybe your search just kind of fumbles. But, hey, you've got a little guide here in a mobile app that could be just as handy. So check it out. It is First Aid from the American Red Cross, and it's free. And then, again, they have all these other similar apps like Earthquake and Hurricane and Wildfire as well. So I just thought it was worth kind of mentioning that it's out there. And I think they did a pretty good job. And look at all that. I mean, the information on there is – a lot and huge. Yeah. I mean, I think if you were in a really perilous situation and you had your phone on you, you probably kind of figure out what you need to do if you didn't know already. So, and then there's even like, hey, places, you know, when you hit on the first aid training, you know, places call, you know, if you want to get the training, it leads you to a call us or learn more. And, you know, with everything going on right now, it's not a bad thing, I think, to download for your phone. Just at least check it out and
nice
luck. So it's the American Red Cross First Aid, and it's free. There you
go. Excellent. Very cool. Easy to thumb through there and kind of get lost in all the different things.
Yeah, I thought it was very well laid out, and again, there's more information than I thought I would ever need. You know, just the prepare tab. I mean, you know, just if you're a hypochondriac or if you're just afraid of natural disasters or whatever, maybe you may not want to download this. But I think more information is better than. I mean, look, there's even a tab in prepare for a landslide. That happens out here on the West Coast, you know, out on the coast area, like in Pacifica area. What do you do? You know, they have like before checklist and they have a during and after and, you know, just stuff you might want to know about.
Cool.
Here you go.
That is First Aid American Red Cross. Cool stuff.
Use it to donate.
Yeah, there you go. Absolutely.
Yeah, it's really easy to do, and I did that today.
Awesome.
Sweet. All right, so vote for your favorite app this week. Is it Auto, SMS Sender, Minimal Reader, or First Aid American Red Cross? You can go to aaapoll.com/83 for episode 83. aaapoll.com/83 and let us know which is your favorite app this week. Early reports are in. Well, very, very early. Yeah, this is going to be a close race. Minimal Reader is out.
Minimal Reader ran away with it.
But but there's only, you know, 10 votes right now. So this is going to change.
It's a sampling. It's like the Nielsen's.
Yeah. This is a short sample we have right here. We'll see where this lands. We have a lot of week ahead of us for which it to change. So that's it. Wow. I think all of our voices are probably destroyed.
That was a show.
That was a lot of Nexus talk.
Google's got to warn us. Oh, wait, they did.
True.
Yeah, that was a lot of stuff. But it's an exciting time going into this. So this is really the last of the big Android-related manufacturer announcements, right? I mean, now we're straight into holidays. And so all
I think so. We've had so many questions about, should I wait for the next Nexus? And it's like clockwork. They do it every year at the end of the year. Yeah. So there's always a new Nexus phone at the end of the year, and I knew that was coming. So now you have more choice.
Well, here's the million-dollar question. Will you be buying any of your loved ones Nexus 7s or Nexus 10s for Christmas?
That is a question worth $1 million. Yeah. And, boy, I don't know if I will be, to be honest. I mean, hey, let's put it this way. My dad got the S3 and took it back and traded it for a flip phone. So I'm not sure my parents are the right people for this kind of device. Having said that, I would definitely recommend it to others. I think that there's some pretty compelling devices that are coming out for the holiday season. For sure. If they're in the market for a tablet, they should definitely consider this.
Yep. I'm very curious to see what the sales look like, when we get to January, how the Q4 sales performance is, you know, in the comparisons.
Yeah.
It's going to be brutal out there, people.
Yeah, be careful.
Shoppers. Yeah, be careful.
All right, that is it. Let's do our end of show plugs. Ron,
all right, yeah. So just go to about.me/RonXO and you can find links to all the wonderful places that you can find me on the web, like Google Plus and Twitter and Facebook, and check out ifanboy.com, which is all about the world of comic books, if you need a break from the world of Android or technology.
Occasionally you do.
Yeah,
occasionally
there's no escapism. Hey, we're talking about Disney and Lucasfilm over there. We're talking about the new X-Men director. And yeah, it's good stuff, geeky stuff. You'll enjoy it.
Awesome. So,
yeah.
All right, and Eileen from a cave, unspecified place. Yes,
I know. Just go to about.me/EileenRose to find out more about me. And I will be in studio next week. But we are also, FYI, doing the show on Monday because Tuesday is election day, and I think there's going to be some election coverage or something on Twitter. Is that true?
Something. Yes, absolutely.
So that's why we moved the show to Monday because I think everybody's going to be thinking about, what's happening with the presidential race on that day. So, and there I am. I'm going to wear the same outfit and I'm going to show you all the new sciencey stuff that I know because I'm a science officer.
I'm happy to hear that. That's what I was expecting from you, Eileen, you. Science officer.
I know. I knew it. So I'm here to please all of you. Right. Want me to be a science officer. And now we're totally randomizing.
That's okay. Let's wrap this up. About.me/JasonHowell, or you can find me on Twitter @JasonHowell. That's it for this week. Leave us a voicemail, 347-SHOW-AA. You can always leave us or drop us an email or a video mail. Attach a link to a video and throw it into an email at AAA@twit.tv. You can find the show. We are on Twitter. We are @AndroidShow. We're on Google Plus. Just look for all that Android there. Show notes are at twit.tv/AAA. You can also find all of our back episodes there, as well as iTunes, YouTube, all over the place. Finally, you can catch us live every Tuesday, except for next week when it's Monday, starting at 5 p.m. Pacific, I think, at live.twit.tv. We'll see you next Monday for another episode of All About Android. Have a great week.
What is
jazz
it?
Jazz hands.
Oh, yeah. There you go.
Oh, yes. Sorry. Yeah.